Hello, this is Abby Mickey, host of the Wheel Talk podcast, and I'm here to convince you to sign up for membership for escapecollective.com. Now, the reason that this is important is because we are a membership-based media model, and that means that we are not beholden to sponsors, but it does come down to you, the members of escapecollective.com. Escape Collective is your hub for all things cycling. There's just new stuff churning out every day, and the members of the Escape Collective make it possible. So thank you to everyone who's signed up. And please, if you enjoy what we do, then, you know, put your money where your ears are and sign up. Become a member. You can become a member at escapecollective.com/join. That's escapecollective.com/join. Thank you so much.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Escape Collective Tour Daily. I'm Kaylee Fretz. I'm here with Ian Trellor and Johnny Long. Johnny is rocking out across the table. What are you singing to?
We are at Bar La Natte in Villefranche. And they are playing Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi.
Fantastic. I don't think the listeners out there will be able to hear it, unfortunately for you, but we can hear it, and it's pumping us up.
It is. There's also a man having a beer near us. There is a variation of haircuts nearby, which some people are too close, so I won't describe them in case they speak English.
There was a man that walked down the street before with a little Bluetooth speaker that was just blasting some Europop, just walking along listening
to his
music.
With very skinny legs.
It was great.
Are the vibes off in Villefranche?
Je pense.
I think the vibes might be off, which is fine. We had a nice Italian for dinner.
We had a superb
Surprisingly
Italian,
nice for really this nice high street.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's fine.
We haven't spent a whole lot of time in the middle of nowhere in this Tour de France.
Do you reckon this is the first podcast to ever be recorded in this town? I think it might be. Definitely at this bar.
With the looks that we're getting, I think it might be.
I feel like the tour has come here before.
Yes, I recognize this place.
No.
No?
No. 1984, Laurent Fignon.
That's where I know it from.
Yeah. The time trial in Villefranche.
Maybe it was Dauphiné, but let's not research that right now.
No, 1984 Tour de France. Ah. A 51-kilometer time trial from Villers-Morgon and Villefranche-sur-Saône.
See, when people on Twitter these days complain about quote-unquote boring Tour de France stages, have they ever sat through a 50-kilometer-long time trial?
Yeah, that's pretty gnarly, actually. We haven't had one of those in a while. Anyway, we've once again gotten pretty far into this podcast without mentioning the winner of the bike race. It was it was quite an exciting stage today. Quite a lot going on. Big breakaway day. We knew this would be a breakaway day going in. Everybody I spoke to this morning was like, it's a breakaway day. You ask, are you going to get in the breakaway? And they're like, I would like to. I don't know if I can, and that turned out to be the case for a lot of them. However, at the end of 3 hours and 51 minutes crossing the line in Bellevue en Beaujolais, Yannis Aguirre, Cofidis' second stage win. And Spain's second stage win of this Tour de France.
The Basque country's second stage winner.
What's going on?
So Spain hadn't won one in 5 years, and Cofidis hadn't won one since the Obama presidency.
2008.
No, wait. Got ourselves a Bush boy.
Sticking point to get stuck on. Since the financial crash?
Yeah.
No.
There we go.
Okay.
Right around then. We're confused at this point. Anyway, let's talk about the stage a little bit. Big breakaway finally gets up the road, but before that ever happened, there were tons and tons of moves. There were also lots of moves from, I should say moves, our two key protagonists. Jonas Vingegaard and Tadej Pogacar keep finding themselves in these breakaways, partly because they're so good and they follow each other around and they like accidentally get these breaks. But what that does is it kind of freaks everybody else out and it messes with these moves because, no, obviously, if they are in the move, it's no longer a breakaway. That is now like the peloton, right? And it messes with all the riders trying to get off the front. We saw, 20 different iterations of a brake today over the course of the first, was it 90K that it took to finally split? As expected, when it did finally go, it was a bunch of really, really strong riders. So we had Izaguirre, obviously, Mathieu Bergadeau.
Second on the stage. Mathieu Bergadeau.
And
well done.
Thank you.
Our young American, Matteo Jorgensen.
Ireland's third favorite son.
Ireland's third favorite son. He was devastated at the finish line. I think he was the strongest one in the group. I believe, Ian, you spoke to...
Thibaut?
No, I spoke to Tobias Johannesson.
Oh,
who
was
also in the breakaway, who said that...
He also
that
thought that
Matteo
was the strongest. Yeah. He was very much of the opinion that Matteo was the strongest, and he even said that that he would understand if Matteo was a little bit pissed off as a result.
Yeah, he was. The sort of TV camera surrounded him. I was kind of standing, watching, taking in the vibe that was coming off of him. And in addition to, I caught him briefly afterward. Yeah, he was sad. He was like sad. He was sort of sitting there. I think it was, maybe it was Gregor that asked the sort of like, oh, well, can you take some positives from this? Are you satisfied with your form at least? And he was like, no, I'm not satisfied with anything. Like I'm just sad and angry. And I have now nearly won two tour stages and I have won neither of them. And I think that we're kind of getting echoes of like Fred Wright last year, where just could not get over the line first. And unfortunately for him, and this is kind of, I think, what's making him so sad and why he was in a much worse mood today at the finish than he was on the Puy de Dôme, where obviously he got caught in sort of the right in the finale, is in that case, he kind of felt like he had done everything he could. In fact, he told me that this morning when we caught up. He's like, yeah, like I spent sort of day ruminating on it. I've kind of decided I did absolutely everything I could have done correctly. And so at that point, you just have to accept.
Exercise contest.
Yeah, you have to accept the result. Whereas today, one, I think he hadn't fully processed it yet. Two, I think felt like he could have won today with some different tactics, some different luck. He feels like he could have / should have won today. And he's looking ahead at the remainder of the race, and today was the day for him. It was the absolute best day. He's a bigger rider, so he's not going to climb as well. Some of the little tiny Whippet guys. And that's what he said. He says, I'm kind of too big for some of these bigger days that are also going to be break days. And so he was sort of despondent, really, that today was his chance, potentially his last chance, and it didn't work out.
And Cofidis, I think, also played it quite well tactically because they had two in the break. They had Guillaume Martin. They also had Jon Izagirre. So Tobias Johannesson from Uno X said that that was an absolute factor in why Matteo Jorgensen wasn't able to get up the road.
Well, and I guess part of Jorgensen's sort of reaction is that next year he's supposedly going to Jumbo-Visma, where he will be put to work and won't necessarily get as many chances to race for stages. In particular, well, I mean, Tiesj van Hoogt got his chance today, but that's like his one chance.
Yeah.
This race. Don't remember him doing it last year. So you see the days ticking down. We're
yeah,
freedom.
I did. So I caught up with Jorgensen this morning and asked him a whole bunch of questions. Some of it was for some feature pieces. Some was just to see how he's doing. And the last thing I asked him, because you kind of have to ask him right now, is, we heard you're going to Jumbo. Can you comment? And he kind of gave me a little mini smile and said, nope. And it's not a confirmation, obviously. But that sounds like it's pretty far along. Yeah. They can't technically announce anything till August 1st due to rules. But yeah, that does sound like it's happening. And for better or for worse, right? Like he's talked a whole bunch about how, and frankly, like Movistar has not really supported him in the ways that you would expect for a pro cyclist if you sort of listen to what Jorgensen is saying. Jumbo-Visma will definitely support him. He will probably become a better rider going to Jumbo-Visma, but the opportunities will diminish dramatically. Although, like on the same token there, the other thing he said this morning was that they came in with plan A, which was Enric Mas, who crashed out in stage one. All of a sudden Movistar had to shift what they were doing, and so this could have been a Tour de France where he didn't have much opportunity either.
Yeah,
if he was
true.
Working for Mas, then he's sitting with Mas all day today.
Even though he's a different type of rider, I imagine he'll have a sort of Christophe Laporte-esque sort of advancement of his ability.
Yeah.
Where you just, by being on like one of the top teams, you just become, you go up a few levels. But then that also doesn't necessarily mean that you don't get chances at races. You know, Christophe Laporte has won more at Jumbo-Visma than he ever would have at Cofidis, and he's still put to work a lot, so it can end up better.
Yeah. Others in the group today, we mentioned Tej Benoot. We mentioned Johannessen from Uno X. We mentioned Gil Martin, Dylan Toons.
Yeah, he dropped off a bit.
Ruben Guerrero. So Jorgensen actually did have a teammate in there with him. Victor Campenaerts was up there doing his thing.
He always is.
Was he?
Yep.
Yeah? Oh, he was.
Oh, he was.
Sorry, Victor.
Dylan Toons was complaining about a sore back at the end.
Yeah, he looked uncomfortable.
Yeah. So much so that one of the Israel media guys tried to get him to do like a little reaction to camera, and Dylan Toons was like, please no. Just let me go on the bus.
Let me get out of here.
Yeah.
And then last, but certainly not least.
Never least.
Our man. Bravo, Thibaut Pinot. So I think that, you know, long-time listeners will know, at least I have something of a soft spot for Thibaut Pinot. That soft spot was slightly hardened today in watching.
Nearly full mutiny from you, which, you know.
I was just really annoyed by him today. And granted, maybe he just didn't have the legs. Maybe he just wasn't feeling that good. But he was the only rider in that front group who was riding for more than one thing. Like, he was riding for both the stage win and GC, and he was effectively, the way that he was riding for neither. He was skipping poles. He was basically just following Jorgensen around.
Even the way he was riding had a sort of aloofness about it, which just rubbed me up the wrong way.
He did move himself into 10th overall, 6:33 back.
Up five places, yeah.
Up five places. So, you know, up into the top 10. Good for him. But, I mean, you could very much... He was a passenger in that sort of final 20K when they were chasing Izaguirre down. And if I was Jorgensen or I was Tej Benoot, who was also putting in some pretty exceptional efforts, Bergadeau was putting in some big efforts, and you've got the guy sitting in 10th overall not pulling through when, you know, if they'd taken a bit extra time, Pinot is now only 32 seconds behind, well, his own teammate, so it doesn't matter.
He could have gone up to like 6th or 7th, I think.
It's all tightly packed in there. So if he had just put his head down and pulled, we would have had a very different scenario. And granted, that's a bit of Homer in me. Just was I was sad for Matteo Jorgensen today, and I was watching Thibaut Pinot, a rider who has a much more extensive palmarès than Jorgensen, just follow him around, and it felt a little sad.
We were standing and we were watching the finale at the Groupama FDJ bus, and you know, when you're in someone's house, you try not to say anything rude. But we kind of wanted to.
Yeah.
Because he was not taking turns. And there were points when Jon Izagirre was 20 seconds away, 30 seconds away, and there was still 15, 20 kilometres left of the stage to go.
It was done.
And that could have been brought back if there had been a little bit more cooperation instead of just Thibaut Pinot and probably some others rolling to the front and then just pulling off.
Also, the way that Pinot zipped across to that breakaway group when they were like close to the Yellow Jersey group was like pretty. That was like, we were like, oh,
it was impressive.
More impressive than you were saying, Alaphilippe's
journeyed
voyage.
Well,
groups.
Pinot and Alaphilippe tried to get across that gap at a similar point in the race. Alaphilippe had to go a little bit. The back gap was a little bit bigger at that point, but not that much bigger. And Pinot crossed it in like a minute, and Alaphilippe sat chasing potatoes in the middle of it for quite some time, which I think is indicative of, well, Pino's actually in pretty good form. He is sitting in 10th overall at this Tour de France. Alaphilippe, unfortunately for the French people,
not looking good.
Doesn't have it at this point.
How close do you think Mattia Jorgensen was to shouting at Pino, you're not the king of France? Because it felt like one of those days today.
Yeah, I think he's a pretty calm guy.
He's not confrontational.
He's not particularly confrontational. But, man, I haven't seen a rider that bummed
really
in a while. He was just standing there He's bummed, man. Like, kudos to him. He was still very professional. He took a whole bunch of interviews. He stopped for like 3 or 4 different television cameras. Yeah. I was kind of watching him the whole time. And yeah, he just, he was bummed.
Someone to root for the rest of the race.
Yep. Yeah. Well, breakaway day. That was a good one. It's good. Good bike racing.
We were saying it's one of those races that was great to watch on TV. Like, action throughout the race, you know, really engaging. But then afterwards, there's not really much to analyze, or like the narrative, like the Matteo Jorgensen narrative was sort of furthered, but there's not that much to chew over from the actual racing. It was just good racing, you know? It's just.
Yeah.
Good racing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, what are the big angles? Sad Matteo Jorgensen, doomed Thibaut Pinot.
Yep. I mean, Jan Izaguirre, good job.
Mathieu Bergadeau out-sprinting Jorgensen.
Love
that
for Bergadeau.
Finale. Love that. We were on that train
actually
early.
quite a good tour for Bergadeau.
Do you think this is Mathieu Bergadeau as a rider who we've spoken about the most and sort of got the most lore with without ever having even spoken to the guy?
Do you think
by this point we've got to agree a pact to never speak to him?
I refuse to.
Is it like don't meet your heroes type of thing?
I think that there's a level of mystique to Mathieu Bergadeau that as soon as you speak to him, no matter what he says, could be the most charismatic person. Kind of doubt it. But it could immediately just be punctured.
Yeah. The closest I've come to interacting with Mathieu Bergadeau was when I went on one of the...
Was when you spoke to Julian Alaphilippe.
was when I went on one of the in-race motorbikes at last year's tour. And Bergadeau had a minutes-long chat with the driver, my motorbike driver. I've no idea what they were talking about, but they were yammering away like they were long-lost pals.
Is Mathieu Bergadeau the most interesting Frenchman in this bicycle race?
Well, where's Victor Lefebvre gone?
Yeah.
Gone.
Dropped off the face of the earth.
Yep.
I imagine he was like vacantly happy that his teammate won today.
Yeah. Dropped off the face of the earth like a 13th century empire.
He finished in 75th place today, 13:21 back.
Is he much of a climber? Is he more of like a punchy?
He's punchy. He's punchy.
So he's done it. He's like, look, I did my job on stage two.
Who did we talk to right after he won? It was Benoit, wasn't it? We talked to one of the Jumbo riders right after Victor Lefebvre took his stage win. And I think it was Tej Benoit. And he was basically like, yeah, we know this about him. Like, he sort of shows up randomly.
Yeah.
Ooh la la.
Merci.
Is that...
That's really cool.
Just got some free salami.
We just got free salami.
Does she work here?
I don't know.
I hope so.
Is it safe? Is this salami safe to eat?
Is it chilled?
It's okay.
She seems real nice.
Welcome.
It's delicious.
French aperitif. Oui.
Oh.
Because the French aperitif. This is the time. This is French time. French beer. French saucisson. French culture in general.
Une question, vous habitez en Villefranche?
We work in Lyon, but we live in Villefranche right now. Yeah.
Dis-moi ce sujet au Villefranche, c'est l'histoire et the things to do around here. C'est qu'est intéressant.
We have a French specialty, a local specialty, at 11 or 20, 30, we celebrate the decade, and we do parties during all the week, and I don't know, I'm not too sure about the, you know, the term in English,
yeah,
but the word in English, but we do bal, you know, bal, we're going to dance.
Oh, dance.
Yeah.
Oh, yes,
Beach,
yes,
party.
Yeah,
around the big, okay, big city, or, you know,
yeah,
around Villefranche. In the Beaujolais.
Cool.
And
that sounds great.
We call it Les Conscrits. Every decade, I have his color, you know? For example, for the when you have 11 years old, this is green. When you have 50 years old, this is orange, you know? 20 years old, this is red.
Yes.
And you have in your smoking the different, you know?
Okay.
Different colors.
To your fun.
Love it.
This
Thank
is
you
a party
for the local,
city.
The local color.
I like that.
There we go. Villefranche.
Villefranche. I think that's enough. That's enough, I guess.
Yeah.
We got a local color. We have two options here. We could either drop into our various corners. We have some corners for and a game. Two games, actually. for today. We could also just talk about tomorrow's stage a little bit. What do we want
to
do first?
I would like to hear about tomorrow's stage because I haven't necessarily. I'm the sort of rider that.
You don't look at the road book till the night
before? I don't look at the road book, no.
Yeah. Well, it is now the night before. And so we can talk about tomorrow's stage. Tomorrow's stage from Châtillon-sur-Chalaronne. Chalaronne, I think, actually, because there's two ends. To Grand Colombier. And we basically we cross this big sort of valley in between us and the sort of ripples at the front side of the Alps, basically. And the Grand Colombier is one of the first big climbs we're going to be hitting in the next week. It is an HC climb. There is technically a small climb sort of to get to it, the Col de la Lib, but I don't even think it's categorized. Maybe it is. Anyway, it's not that big. And then we get an exercise contest up the Grand Colombier, which is a massive climb, 17.8 kilometers at 7%. It's a nasty one. It's been used in the Tour de France a number of times recently. It's going to be pretty warm tomorrow, I think. It is relatively exposed. And I think I mentioned this in the preview podcast way back weeks ago. But the whole last few kilometers, which also kind of level out a little bit, they point straight north. And so if the wind is out of the south, southwest, southeast, you have tailwind there. And we could see, I think, quite a bit of action out of that front GC group. If it's a headwind for that whole last stretch, I think we may see some slightly more reserved racing. Now, right at this moment, wind's out of the north. Will it be changed tomorrow when we're 100K away from here?
Wait, you know which way the wind's going?
Excuse me, Kaylee. Yes, thank you. Kaylee just said, right at this moment, just looked around in a town that he has never been to.
Also, looking at the wind. I never heard of that in my life.
And it's just like, oh yeah, wind's out of the north. Do you? What are you? Are you a compass?
Which direction is the wind blowing down the street?
Down it.
Right. Which direction is the sunset?
Could not tell you, Kaylee.
How do you, we can't see the sun?
There is no way that you can see the sun. How can you see that?
Is this because you live in a non-built-up place that you're just in tune with nature?
Colorado. Beautiful Colorado.
No, look. You know what? The sun is on the right-hand side of the buildings.
What is this?
West, north, south, east.
Like a Sherpa or something. You know what I've always said, though? They should definitely put more altitude camps up in Colorado. I've always said that.
It's probably cheaper than Tenerife. I imagine that the facilities are better.
Peter Sagan likes it.
Peter Sagan loves it.
I think when you spend a lot of time, too much time riding a bicycle, you get quite in tune with wind direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've obviously got some work to do, John.
You two have some work to do.
That would be more obvious.
I didn't feel like that was that unusual.
To just immediately know which direction the wind is blowing from.
Yeah, it's like Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock Holmes, where it's like zooming like, oh, a little ink stain on his shirt.
Kaylee just going into his mind palace in Bellefranche.
A page turned in the book on the countertop. He's a reader.
Anyway. Tomorrow finishes atop the Grand Colombier. It is an ore category climb. It is going to be.
Is it a GC day?
It's going to be a GC day. Oh, yeah, yeah. The question is it a GC day between the two riders that we care most about on the GC? Or is it just like the two of them riding away from everybody else and then there's a big headwind and so they just ride together?
I'd kind of like a Groupama FDJ GC battle.
It is also. Well, we have one now. They're within 30 seconds of each other.
To be fair, Devo Goedu's supposedly picked a fight with everyone else in Groupama FDJ. There was stuff about him and Arnaud Demar not getting on, then him and Michael Storer not getting on. I think that one might have been
Michael
not
Storer?
True.
He's
I think
the nicest it, I, kid.
The thing, Ronan McLaughlin always sends me these like news stories on Instagram from this account, which sometimes gets things bang on and sometimes gets things completely wrong. So I don't want to put that out there into the universe because Michael Storer is a lovely young man.
Michael Storer, the most mild man in the peloton.
When I interviewed him last year at the tour, it was just like he was so downbeat on like his chances. It's like, you're at the tour, like you're obviously good. Just like have some self-belief. But,
right?
Yeah.
We do have... Maybe that is the most interesting thing to happen tomorrow, in fact.
Should we try and drum this up, this narrative?
Yes. Let's drum this up.
Let's start asking like some very pointed questions to both Pino and Goedu.
Actually, sorry. Is tomorrow a bit of a big day in France?
Oh, it is.
It is Bastille Day tomorrow. It is
Holy
July 14th.
Oh, we are not going to get dinner. There is no chance of us getting dinner tomorrow.
Yeah, should we like book somewhere?
I think we need to like
there's
just
nowhere nearby.
We just got to stash some sweaty baguettes in the car for 6 hours in the roasting
pot. I think buy pot noodles.
Ooh.
From the supermarket.
Where are we getting water from, Johnny?
The kettle in the hotel.
Oh.
Is that not good enough for you, Ian?
I'm sorry for having standards.
We were actually I looked up to see if there was a Buffalo Grill that we could get to, but the nearest Buffalo Grill is in Chambéry, which is like an hour away.
Oh, that is too far.
Yeah.
Or is it? What about a lunchtime Buffalo Grill? That would really put the cat amongst the pigeons.
I'd like to do a Buffalo Grill.
We're going to do it last year and we didn't. We can't go 3 years waiting. Well, GC day tomorrow. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it will be a some kind of GC day. The question, again, is whether it's a Pogacar Vingegaard GC day or whether it's just the two of them dropping everyone else and sort of the, you know, third through 15th reordering itself again, because it is an exceptionally difficult climb. Last time we went up it, stage 15 of the 2020 Tour de France, we had Tadej Pogacar taking the win over Primoz Roglic, although they crossed the line at the same time.
I've got, talking of when we're talking about drumming up drama at the Tour, I've got a point of contention amongst this trio right here.
Ooh, boy.
Really?
Kaylee, your fantasy pick today was Mattia Jorgensen.
It was.
You also spoke to him before the stage and asked him about whether he was going to the break, didn't you? Was that just a weird coincidence?
It was just a strange coincidence.
Was it?
Yeah, it's just a really strange coincidence.
Okay. Do we have commissaires for the fantasy competition? Or did you have any witnesses to see this?
I mentioned the fact that I was going to pick him in the car ride over.
Yeah,
but
the thing is, you can change your pick before the... It gets locked.
I will admit, speaking with him did confirm my pick. I was like, yep, going with... Because that's... All right, I'll be honest. It's the first thing I asked him. I said, for the purposes of my fantasy pick, are you going in the break today? And he said something like, I would like to.
So this is our new editorial direction for the rest of the tour. Just going up to guys who might be in the break. This is fantasy cycling at two speeds. Me and Ian here on bread and water and the rest of the Escape Collective crew.
I'm just choosing Julian Alaphilippe over here like an absolute schmuck.
Meanwhile, Kaylee's there with his information bag just pumping them directly into his veins.
I would never in a million years have thought that choosing Julian Alaphilippe was a less safe bet than choosing Matthew Bergadou, and yet here we are.
Here we are. Do you think if Julian Alaphilippe ends up going to Total Energies next year or whenever, that he would end up riding in support of Mathieu Bergadou? Because that would be...
I wonder if there is like a lookalike clause in the contract, because there is a lot of Total Energy's marketing around at service stations and stuff. Like
yeah,
there's cardboard cutouts.
Today,
we saw a Pierre Latour cardboard cutout.
Not just a Pierre Latour cardboard cutout, a blurry Pierre Latour cardboard cutout where they couldn't get him to just stay still for the photograph.
That's the thing. He's constantly in motion. He is full of energies.
You tried to feed him a coffee this morning, which is nice.
And we tagged him on Instagram, and he didn't even look at it.
He
saw it. What's he done? He replied.
He sent a laughing emoji back at us.
The friendship tour continues.
That is exciting.
That is exciting.
That is very exciting.
Oh, God.
I'm screenshotting it.
Bad for our... Bad look for us journalistically, but in terms of... enjoyment of the friendship tour. The stock has never been higher.
One reason now to go to the Total Energies bus.
Yes. I think we need to find another one and like feed cardboard Pierre like a baguette or something.
That's very exciting.
That is exciting.
That's the most interaction I've ever had with Pierre Latour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He now has seen what Ian looks like. He might recognize you.
They pay pretty close attention, actually. So this is the thing that's kind of... it took me a while to figure this out, but there are way fewer of us than there are of them. Right? There's 175 riders in this Tour de France.
If someone talked about you, you'd want to know what they were talking about.
Exactly. And
that's making me reconsider like, everything I've ever said.
And there's like maybe 50 reporters that like actually go to buses and actually like wander around and talk to riders and stuff.
Yeah.
So there's fewer of us. And, you know, we don't talk to them that often because Pierre Latour's English is not great and our French is not great. So we don't talk to them very much. But yeah, they pay attention. And here's the other thing. We see them, helmets on, glasses on, like on the bike, you know, on the way to the start, whatever, racing. they can see out of the buses.
Yeah, I do. Every time I stand outside of a bus, I do imagine that they're just like giving me the finger. Which is a good, it's a good way to...
But I will say that we are quite heavily disguised. Like, on a typical day, I have a mask on.
Yeah.
I have sunglasses on.
And a hat.
And I have a hat on, so they've got like a glimpse of forehead.
Yeah, it's true. But your hair is noticeable.
It's under the hat. It's the perfect disguise.
I think it's time to get to our corners.
Yes. Which corner do we want first? Should we have our regular...
We need Maya Sabla first.
Maya Sabla corner.
And then we're going to have a game that Ian is running.
Yes, the daily... We should call it something.
Yeah.
Instead of daily bread, what about daily pain?
I don't want to make...
That is what we call...
Ooh, daily pain?
We need some pain.
I don't want to pretend that I made up this game either. This basically the almost the exact same rules of this game are used on a couple other places.
Nothing's original anymore. It's
yeah,
just
like one was like there's like a
not.
TV show with this ages ago, and then if anybody likes the Football Ramble, they do a version of this. Anyway, I didn't make it up. Obviously,
are you saying that there's nothing original anymore?
No.
That takes me back to high school, where my English teacher, trying to motivate the class, was like, "You will not have an original thought in your lives," and it stuck with me, and I haven't.
Well, speaking of high school, we on the drive between the stages today, we were listening to your guys' sort of high school music, and all
mostly
I was thinking,
Caleb.
I was driving, all I was thinking about while you were running
Johnny
through
was
these songs,
very
was,
quiet.
Oh, it was just dawning on me that all the music I've listened to was just derivations of that music, and that was derivations of music before it.
It was
and it
a
made
big,
me feel not great.
A big Guster Day, which was not a band that I had heard before, but apparently it was big in,
as well.
In America.
It was big in Burlington, Vermont in 2003. Among
in
myself
fact,
and my friends.
Between 30 to 40 of Kaylee's year at school went to see them in concert.
It's a high strike rate.
That's a great strike rate. And that's information that everyone needed to know.
What else did we
Guster fan,
we had,
hit us up.
We had Guster. We had the format. We had. I mean, this is telling you
this is
who
probably,
I was as a 14-year-old.
Is this hitting our demographic, though? Probably.
Huh?
This is probably hitting our demographic, this sort of conversation.
Oh, absolutely. I guarantee you that there's going to be a number of listeners out there who...
we got Gust heads.
...in 2003 were as into Guster or hated it the other direction.
Yeah.
Or if they were in Australia, had never even heard of them.
Do you think this is going to replace our previously most popular segment of the podcast when we talked about the different names for popsicles... I can't remember the other dumb one.
Yeah, that went
Icy
down
Pops,
very well.
What was the...
Icy Poles.
Icy Poles.
Someone on our Discord made a very good comment. If you catch Michael Kwiatkowski on a bad day, he is an Icy Pole.
Maya Sabla. Should we bring
Maya
it back
Sabla.
To something
yes.
at least tangentially
let's,
relevant?
Let's do Maya Sabla.
Right. Today, the Maya Sabla is in 44th place, so we are inching further up the general classification with a time of 1 hour, 0 minutes and 23 seconds. Is it your go first today, Kaylee, or
no,
is
I went
Ian?
First yesterday, I think.
Ian's go first. Okay.
Right? Because I got it wrong, you got it wrong, I got it right. Yeah.
Okay, today...
It's 3-2 right now, right?
No, it's 3-all.
3-all?
I think it's 3-all and I've got one.
I think you're right.
Don't know how that works.
Yep.
But so, Ian, you can have team... nationality, or I will give you a hint.
I will have team.
Lotto Disney.
I think because he was close to it before and then dropped out of it and then was in the breakaway today, which is something that I've just learned. I am on the Victor Campenaerts train.
Ian, you've...
He had it before. Did he lose it and retake
He's
it?
He's retaken it.
Yes.
Despite Ian being like kind of ill at the minute, he seems to have become fluent in French today because he just understood our way to describe what was on offer at the restaurant perfectly.
Perfectly.
And then now he's sort of just knowing who the
galaxy-brained Victor Campenaerts into the Maya Sabla.
Victor Campenaerts back in the Maya Sabla. A rider I don't think would go along with it, even though he's a fan of the hour record.
Yeah,
the
I was
great
standing,
irony of the competition.
I was standing in front of him at the start in Clermont-Ferrand the other day, and I considered explaining it to him, and then I didn't because I was like, I don't think he's gonna.
The problem is with this with this classification, if you approach the wrong person, like some people will take it as a badge of honor, but for some people, you telling them that they are a full hour off the pace will be kind of like telling them that they're kind of a bit shit.
There are a few riders hovering around who, if things work out well, I mean, they're going to lose more time.
I actually had a sneaky feeling about Dylan Toynes.
Wow, so tomorrow, everybody that's not named Jonas Vingegaard and Tadej Pogacar is going to lose minutes to an hour.
We're going to get a shunting.
No, not an hour, because there's only one climb at the end. But there's going to be a big shift tomorrow.
Yeah.
Somebody that's 15 minutes away from it right now is going to be in it tomorrow.
We will almost definitely have a different Mario Sabra tomorrow.
Oh, absolutely. But congrats to Victor for fighting back.
Two-time Mario Sabra wearer this tour. No one else has that achievement.
Nope. That's really impressive. Should we play our game?
Yeah, I'm the...
Your quiz master.
Game master?
The pain master.
The pain master of this game. And what I am choosing today with the...
Should we explain the pain thing?
I did briefly, but then...
Yeah, okay. So in France, the word for bread is pain. Pain. which is spelt pain. And when you're driving through French towns and go past a bakery, they just have on the outside of the bakery in enormous letters, pain.
It's good. It is really good.
So you'll just drive along and you'll just see a sign that says pain and you'll be like, yeah, I feel that. I understand where you're coming from. I am in the same place. So we just, like this morning, for instance, in beautiful Clermont-Ferrand, a town that I profoundly miss, which is not something I thought I'd say no. 4 days ago.
We disparaged this town,
and then we loved it.
We loved it.
I actually felt like I'd been torn away from a second home
when
we left Clermont-Ferrand. Anyway, so this morning I just said to the boys, I'm just going to go get some pain. And they're like, okay. So I went and got some pain, came back with the pain, and then as we drove past it on the way out, I said, there is the source of so much pain.
I also asked for chocolate pain, and I got chocolate pain.
Yeah. Anyway, so I am the pain master today.
Yeah.
And the game of pain that I have, this is confusing, actually, because this game is not relevant to Brett.
It doesn't matter.
And we've just dragged the listener into a side tangent.
Yeah.
A pain-related side tangent, which I think it's quite on brand for us, to be honest. So my game today, we have a rotating cast. Loser buys the beer and has to be the game master the next night, which is why
I'm one-time champion. I'm
which is why I am 17 euro poorer.
Yeah.
So today, I would like you fellas to tell me who are the top 20 riders in this the Tour de France 2023 who have spent the most kilometers in the break.
Oof.
Challenger goes first.
Wait, but I won last night.
No, I won last night. You were the paint master last night.
I think we agreed that I lost last night.
Sorry?
We can agree that I lost last
night.
You
lost last night. Okay. So name all the riders. We have 20 of them that are in the top 20.
I mean, there are more than... Well, sorry, yes. There are 20 in the top 20. Yes. Well done, Kaylee.
Really good at knowing where the sun sets. Less good at basic arithmetic.
And we go back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was your game.
Nielsen Palace.
Yes, in number one, Nielsen Palace.
Julian Alaphilippe.
Yes.
Oh.
In 11th.
Oh. Matthew Bergadou.
Yeah.
Bergadou.
That's good. 14th.
Andre Amador.
Yes, 15th.
Why am I going for deep cuts this early on?
Matteo Jorgensen.
Yes, in 3rd.
Mads Pedersen.
Johnny? You made a mess of that one, mate.
Is he even on the list?
I mean, it's somewhere on the list. There's 166 riders left in the race.
Oh.
Kampenaerts?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I should have gone Wout van Aert.
Wout van Aert.
Is he on the list?
Wout van Aert is. Kampenaerts is.
Mathis Lavelle.
Chris Nylens.
No, you've lost Johnny. You've
I know,
lost.
But no, I'm just...
Chris Nylens.
Chris Nylens, yes. Who else?
Now
we're just naming people. And hoping that...
James Shaw?
No.
Oh, he's only one day.
You're missing Jonas Gregor?
Oh, yeah.
He's an Uno X-boy.
Johansson.
Simon Guglielmi. Guglielmi. Oh, of course. Guglielmi.
Johansson?
Johansson, 17th.
Give us a top five.
Top five. Paulus, Gregor, Jorgensen, Guglielmi, Chris Nealens.
I panicked there.
All right.
No bottle.
I get a point. Johnny's on tomorrow. Point,
and I've got to buy the beers.
Yep.
I hope I don't have to pay for the snacks too. I hope they were gratis. Cool. Well, then I'm Quizmaster tomorrow.
I'm excited to get my nose back in the game.
We should head over to Jose Ben, who, as you may have been able to guess already, is going to be giving us the lowdown on the 14th of July, Bastille Day. So let's talk revolution.
Tomorrow is 14 July. The 14th of July, or 14 juillet, is the most important national holiday of France. The festivities are everywhere, from the smallest towns to the biggest cities. Grand spectacle extraordinaire. Let's go back in time for some old-fashioned revolution to explain what the 14 juillet actually is. We're talking about the end of the 18th century. France had a class society of clergy, nobility, bourgeoisie, and peasants. The nobility made up less than 2% of the population and the clergy around 1%. These estates paid no taxes and had a lot of power, especially the clergy. About 97% of the population belonged to the peasantry and the bourgeoisie, or merchant class, with peasants being the largest group by far. They worked the lands of the noblemen, had to cough up all the taxes, but had nothing to say politically. Not only the peasants and the bourgeoisie were unhappy at the end of the 18th century, can you blame them? The nobility was also dissatisfied from halfway into that 18th century. Under King Louis XV, they lost several of their noble privileges as the monarch tried to distribute taxes more fairly. In itself, a great idea, but the nobility blocks all attempts at tax reform. Yes, it happens in all ages. Back to 1789 and the start of the French Revolution on that 14th of July. The king, Louis XVI by now, and his wife, Marie Antoinette, were not popular, to put it mildly. They spent a lot of tax money on palaces, pensions, wars, loans and luxuries. Marie Antoinette, for example, had bought herself one luxurious farmhouse and had incurred a lot of gambling debts. But as the king was appointed and anointed by God, who could say he was wrong? His power was considered absolute and unchallenged, but that was about to change. The new age of enlightenment, where people were encouraged to think for themselves outside of the strict boundaries of religion, several very expensive wars fought by the French king, leaving the state almost bankrupt, the church's enormous wealth and the peasants' poverty, plus a disastrous harvest in 1788, led to a perfect storm and fertile grounds for revolution. It's the 14th of July, 1789, in Paris. About 20,000 Parisians headed for La Bastille, which was the most important prison in town. It was the symbol of the French Ancien Régime, the old ruling class. The protesters were aiming to loot the ammunition depot in the basement. The storming of the Bastille was one of the first major acts of violence of the French Revolution. It is considered to be the start of the revolution, marked by major uprisings of the French people against the absolute power of King Louis XVI. The capture of the prison was a sign to the population that the monarchy's rule and oppression were over and that they could seize power. Fun fact, at the time of the storming of the Bastille, there were only 7 prisoners there, which did not make the event any less meaningful. It was a symbolic start to change. This period in French history, comprising of many years of revolution, oppression and terror, and new revolution, is too complicated to explain in a few words. Some key moments, though. It started on that 14th of July, 1789, and in 1792, the monarchy was abolished. A year later, Louis XVI was decapitated by guillotine, as was his wife, Marie Antoinette. By July 1793, the French Revolution was in crisis. The economy was in shambles and the country was beset by internal and external enemies. In the face of this crisis, the new regime turned to terror as a way to consolidate its power and silence its opponents. Also very familiar in modern times. But this phase also ended, and in November of 1799, Napoleon Bonaparte seized power via a coup d'état. The coup marked the end of the revolution because France goes back to absolute power again, but now with the later crowned Emperor Napoleon.
All right, gentlemen, that's it. That's it from us tonight from Villefranche. Thanks to our hosts here at the Bar La Nat Cocktails. You gave us many weird looks, but you also gave us free charcuterie. We think. Maybe we'll pay for it. Unclear. Lovely little town. Great light. Good light in this town.
From the west.
Yes.
Good light from the west.
That is where the sun sets.
See, I knew that one.
We'll be back tomorrow from whatever we figure out in terms of logistics. Whatever we figure out tomorrow, we'll be back with another episode of the Escape Collective Tour Daily. As a reminder.
Oh, yeah.
We forgot to do the sign-up thing in the beginning.
But if you've got to this far into the podcast and you're not signed up, then you really are rinsing us for everything we're worth.
Right?
And honestly.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for those of you who have joined. Head over to escapecollective.com/join. All right, we're out of here. We're going to go find our hotel. And we'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Au revoir.
Ça va.
À demain.